Hello, and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. One of the missions of this radio program is to capture an oral history of San Francisco and the gay rights movement here. We've put some of our favorites over the years on our website, outinthebay.com or outinthebay.org, where you can listen or download for podcasts. For example, my partner Eric Jansen interviewed Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon about their historic marriage at City Hall here in 2004. In 2008, I interviewed three of the real-life people portrayed in the film Milk. That's where I met tonight's guest, who also acted in that film. He's a historian, gay rights activist, photojournalist, and photographer. But he's actually here to share with us the story and life of another amazing San Franciscan, Jose Saria, who passed away August 19th, 2013. While Harvey Milk was the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in this country, Jose Saria was the first openly gay person to run for office. And he founded the imperial court system, which we will explain. He was a drag queen, a pioneer, and a maverick. Here to talk about Jose Saria is photographer Dan Nicoletta. Dan, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you, Marilyn.
So good to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm a big admirer of yours. You're a historical figure at this point. You've given a lot of your life to our movement and our community and our culture. And you can also find Dan at DannyNicoletta.com and check out the amazing historical photographs that he has there on the site. Let's talk about Jose. What do you remember most about Jose Saria?
I like to think of Jose as sort of like feisty gentility. You know, he was a queer elder, but he also had a very boyish quality to himself. And as I got to know him better, I felt like I was just talking to one of my street queen friends, you know.
But he was a queen. I mean, he was a queen. He was quite, he dressed in girls' clothes as a child, and his family didn't really, wasn't bothered by that. He was a free person all along, it seemed like to me. He served in World War II as a soldier. I mean, he died at age 90 or 89 or 91 or
91.
Yeah.
And yeah, he had the good fortune of having a godmother that encouraged his gender fluidity. And that's, you know, back in the 50s, it was kind of a rare,
radical thing to do.
It was rare, yeah.
Yeah, you didn't have that kind of support from families.
Yeah.
Not that you even have that much now,
yeah.
60 years later. Well, so you were sent out on assignment by the Bay Area Reporter, the BAR, the famous gay news weekly and now website, of course, to cover what's called drag balls of the 1970s. So what are drag balls?
Well, picture this.
It just sounds funny.
I'm 19 years old, and I want to become a photographer and a filmmaker, right? So I start working for Bay Area Reporter, and they send me out to cover the drag balls. And I love theater people, and so for me, that was just fantastic. And the minute I stepped foot into that world, I wanted to be part of it. And so I got to photograph people like Jose and Michelle and meet all those folks. And then within the next year, Harvey was elected, and he became a beloved figure on that scene because they, of course, wanted to be a political force. And they were actually a very important one.
The drag artists?
Well, the Tavern Guild and all the drag balls that they held were actual fundraisers for different things.
Now, this is before the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence.
In a sense, it was the...
Which is a large fundraising
the forerunners of the sisters. You know, the courts still function. There's over 60 in the country. But the sisters somehow were past the torch. The courts still do a lot of fundraising, but the sisters have sort of risen up as sort of one of the primary vessels for that need in the community.
They're more visible, perhaps, in our contemporary scene than the imperial court. But the imperial court is where it all began, and Jose began that imperial court.
That's right. He just dreamed it up one day. And
he had a vision.
There were drag balls before that, but they were not as formalized as what he envisioned them
to
be.
So tell me about drag ball. I mean, so not like we think of drag shows now. We think of cabaret performers. We think of Lady Bunny and Heclina, and we think of Donna Sachet, and we think of all these people. But you're talking about balls where people, there was a sort of cotillion energy. I mean, paint a picture of what that looked like to you.
Well, they modeled themselves after the Viennese courts. So there was, you know, elections and people became that year's empress and emperor, and they held the yearly elections, and whoever won the votes would be crowned king and queen or emperor and empress at a yearly drag ball called the coronation. And that caught on, and it became such a beloved ritual for the community. And we're talking 300 to 400 people in a big hall like Bill Graham Civic, and in such beautiful finery and with entertainers. And it was really quite elegant and epic and impressive for me, especially as a 19-year-old.
I bet. You're 19, you're like, what is this world?
Yeah. It was delightful.
Well, and also it sort of counteracts the image of gay men being busted in gay bars by the cops. I mean, it's sort of the exact opposite of that. You talk about elegance and sort of costume finery, and that's a sort of world that is completely different than what was going on in the streets sometimes in this city.
Well, they were a more prosperous group of people, and by and large, they were business owners that did well, and and this was their yearly
entertainment or expression, creativity,
and they would do elaborate costumes that cost thousands of dollars, and they would have entourages with as many as 20 people in their entourage when they did a presentation, and it was really fantastic.
How do you know how this was perceived by what we think of as the mainstream culture at the time? This is in the 70s.
Well, there was an appreciation for it, certainly, and that came over from the North Beach world and the appreciation of bohemian culture, and there was a lot of people who would attend these balls as just ticket buyers. You know, you would sit at a circular table. It wasn't a stage show per se, even though there was a runway and a stage. But it was a banquet context.
Like we have now for the HRC and the lesbian rights groups, and do all these kind of round tables where it's entertainment.
Yeah.
Sort of the beginning of that. Of the first idea of that.
Yeah. And
fundraisers. It was all about raising funds.
Yeah.
And those funds would go to help, certainly with the Tavern Club. They helped pay legal bills because Jose wanted those queens who were arrested in the gay bars by the cops to fight the charges.
A variety of things. By the time I'm involved in the 70s, Operation Concern, there's a big interface there.
What's that?
That was a mental health concept that had to do with providing mental health services to LGBT people. There was support of candidates. There's all kinds of gray areas, because nonprofits are not supposed to support political causes, but
sure.
there was some hybridization there, and there was a lot of banter that ultimately fostered the election of somebody like Harvey Milk. It's like the word got out in those contexts, and Harvey would attend their functions and show his face in those places because he really wanted that support.
In some ways, it sounds like you're sort of describing the mainstream gay culture of its time.
I would characterize it as somewhat mainstream,
It's the sort of establishment of the gay culture.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to get connected, you had to know these people and support them and go to their events. And they would help elect Harvey Milk, et cetera.
That's true. And there was conservatism in that context as well, So
what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm sure that some of the people that attended those balls were more conservative and supported the more conservative candidates. It wasn't necessarily a big love fest, it was a very...
You may not have supported an openly gay candidate like Harvey Milk.
No, they would have supported gay candidates because they would want that functionally and fundamentally, but they might support a more conservative one is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's a diverse crowd is really kind of what I meant.
Well, we actually... have a phone call coming in right now. We don't usually take phone calls for such a short program. It's only a half an hour program. But we do have a phone call from Empress Segalina with the Imperial Court of San Francisco on the phone to talk about tomorrow's service. Now, tomorrow's service, it's the Imperial State Funeral at Grace Cathedral. This is no small matter, people. It's at Grace Cathedral on California Street in San Francisco at 11 a.m., honoring the historic life and legacy of Jose Julio Saria, and that's tomorrow at 11 a.m. So I would love to hear from you, Empress. Go ahead and talk.
Well, how are you, Marilyn? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on.
Well, you know, tomorrow is going to be a very historic day in San Francisco as we honor Jose's life. Jose was an amazing pioneer of civil rights, of the LGBT civil rights. And, you know, in 1961, he was the first openly gay man in the nation to run for public office and running for the Board of Supervisors here in San Francisco in 1961.
Do you have a memory of him? Do you have something that you want to share with us that's a memory we would love to know about?
Well, Jose was the very first Empress of San Francisco, and I am the 46th Empress of San Francisco. And for me, he was an amazing friend, an amazing mentor, and someone that I, as an Empress of San Francisco, to be able to walk even 46 years later in his footsteps as an Empress, I stand in awe of this man and what he has done for our community and the leadership that he's provided San Francisco.
And he was really the first. I mean, in some sense, what Dan Nicolette and I, my guest here on Out in the Bay, I'm Marilyn Pittman. That's what you're listening to is Out in the Bay here on KLW. That's what we're talking about, is that he was really the pioneer, the first person to do the things that he did. And he's, I think Harvey Milk takes a lot of the energy because of the amazing life that Harvey had and the amazing history that Harvey made and the amazing person that Harvey was. But I think that Jose came before that, is the pioneer. There's always a pioneer before the pioneer.
And absolutely.
Dan?
And, you know, in reference to Milk, he was the first person to endorse Milk in his election in the Board of Supervisors here in San Francisco. You know, Jose was a catalyst for community organizing, especially at the grassroots level, you know, and building a coalition that, you know, now has spanned from San Francisco across the United States and Canada and Mexico.
That's right.
And it's amazing. It's a really an amazing man. And tomorrow we're going to have the most amazing homecoming and send-off.
I'll bet it will be quite the to-do. It'll be quite the thing, right?
Absolutely.
Entertaining, hilarious, moving, touching, emotional.
Absolutely.
And wonderful. Thank you so much for calling in. I want to get back to talking with Dan, but I so appreciate your calling in. It really means a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Marilyn, thank you so
Thanks
much
for calling, Sabaline. Thank you, honey.
Thank
Sabaline,
you.
Now I've got it. Yeah, thank you again.
All right, love.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Danny Nicoletta is my guest, DannyNicoletta.com. He's a historian, a photographer, a photojournalist. He was portrayed in the movie Milk. He was in the movie Milk. Can I just ask you quickly what
and
that was?
And I was a good friend of Jose Sarias.
And a good friend of Jose Sarias, which is why you're here, you introvert. And can I just ask you quickly what that was like to be in Milk? Because, you know, that's just always interesting to all of us here.
Sure. You know, it was one of the best experiences of my life. And, you know, it changed my life. And I'm
How? May I ask?
Well, I get emails and contacted from people from all corners of the globe, and sometimes they just want to chat or say hi and say that, you know, I inspired them. Other times they have projects that they want to, you know, have my work.
It's increased your visibility.
Yeah.
And your
work. And so I've been, since Milk came out 5 years ago, I've been a busy boy. But
isn't that wonderful?
It's good. I feel like it's a calling. You know, I feel like it. And I think Jose and I were in sync on this. When we finally did meet in 2011 in a more substantial way, he was my house guest. And I was doing an art project for the San Francisco Art Commission. And it just worked out that he would end up being my house guest. And it was such a great meeting of the minds because of that calling. And we just really, I think he got who I was in the world, and I certainly was very aware of who he was in the world and admired him and was inspired by him. And to be in proximity together and have him walking around my house in his muumuu was just as good as it gets.
And yet, of course, you know, he's not nearly as well known, at least in the mainstream world, as Harvey Milk. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's coming.
There will be a
feature drama about Jose's life. It's such a storybook life. It has to happen because it's just too good not to be told. It's so brilliant. His life, he lived his life brilliantly. He was a true walking piece of poetry, and he was a feisty activist, and he wouldn't, you know, he went to great lengths and great risk to accomplish what he accomplished. And
for example, he worked with the famed attorney Melvin Belli, whose office was on the same block as the Black Cat Bar down there next to the Transamerica building on Montgomery Street. And what they did was they wanted to prevent these arrests that would happen every Halloween. It was illegal for men to dress as women with, quote, an intent to deceive. So what he had them do is they wore these little black cat signs on their outfits saying, I am a boy. So the police couldn't accuse them of intending to deceive, so they couldn't arrest them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is activism. And that's an end run around the cops, right?
The cops were relentless, you know, and they were brutal, and they remained brutal on beyond the transformation that occurred in San Francisco. So it was not lost on Jose that this was a societal problem that needed to be reversed, and he put himself in harm's way, put himself on the front lines. We sort of characterize him as our Rosa Parks, really.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense.
I think it's true.
That makes very good sense. He did this thing at the Black Cat Bar down there at 710 Montgomery, where the Financial District meets North Beach in San Francisco. And what he would do is he sang, and he would get the audience of gay men to put their arms around each other. Now, this is not something done in public. I mean, it's a private bar, but still, around each other, and sing with him God Save Us, Nellie Queens, to the tune of God Save the Queen.
And you have to realize that, in a way, that was a very bold move, because you weren't allowed to... Same-sex people were not allowed to touch each other in that bar.
Oh, not in that bar.
Well, there could be an arrest based on same-sex touching.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You couldn't dance.
You're supposed to be like a lap dance and sit there?
No, you could not. And, you know, that's why in the speakeasy era, they would actually men would bring women friends, and as soon as they were tipped off that the cops were going to do a raid, they would change from same-sex dancing to heterosexual partnering.
To have their beard, as we call it.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, these are very bold actions on his part.
Yeah.
And this is in the 50s.
The 50s and the 60s.
And the 60s,
yeah.
But it began in the 50s.
Yeah. In the 60s, the irony is there was over 22 lesbian bars in North Beach area in the 60s, the early 60s. And they kept on getting closed and shut down by the cops. But the resilience of our community is an incredible thing to look back on. You know, there was just this desire to have a better way, and people put themselves really on the front lines in that era. I have such great respect for my elders.
Courage, yes, yeah. Me too. And we think of the gay rights movement beginning officially with Stonewall in 1969, related in New York, the Stonewall Bar related to Judy Garland's death, and at the same time, that's 69, you're talking about the two decades before this, that this was going on here in San Francisco. It's inspiring. It's moving. It's emotional. What do you anticipate about tomorrow's memorial at Grace Cathedral in terms of your own experience and what you know about the ceremony?
Well, I've been covering the LGBT movement now for 34 years, and I feel that this is going to be a watershed moment. I mean, this is one of the true leaders of our movement who's being laid to rest, and it is being characterized as a state funeral, and for those in the know, it really is. I mean, we consider this, you know, it's like we're putting our Martin Luther King to rest, and it'll carry all the gravity of that for those of us in the know. And we encourage anybody from, you know, the larger societal fabric to come and bear witness to this amazing moment. You know, it really is a San Franciscan's historical moment, you know, and Jose had a great love for the Emperor Norton, so there's a real cool subtext, because he took on the nomenclature of the Widow Norton, so there's a real sort of theatrical dimension to this that's gonna be very apparent tomorrow. I encourage everybody to come out 11 a.m.
At Grace Cathedral,
yeah.
On California Street in San Francisco.
Yeah. That's a big church. It'll hold a lot of
It's like a thousand
hearts.
People or something, maybe.
Yes.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, He had a street, Jose Soria Court, named after him near the Harvey Milk Library in the Castro in 2006. He received a Lifetime Achievement Award at Pride here in 2005, and he has a plaque embedded on the sidewalk there as well. But you've done some things to help ensure his memory, correct?
Well, I did a project with Jose with the San Francisco Art Commission, and, that was how I got to be close friends with him. We honored him with a rubber stamp that was part of a whole project that they were doing with 15 different artists. And ever since then, there's just been a lot of back and forth around the various photographs that I took back in the 70s. And then we did some more photos when he was my house guest in 2011. And the court has been gracious enough to invite me into the fold to continue that documentation. And so there really is a wonderful epic story in the making here, and I'm just so blessed to have been an insider on that.
What was Jose's take on the movie Milk?
I think, Jose was a little bit frustrated by Harvey's ascent because I think authentically he really did do the trench work long before Harvey, even became a sort of visible force. And I think he celebrated Harvey's success, but then I think he would have liked to have seen a bigger embracing of his own story within his lifetime so that he could enjoy that. I know there was, and there is a wonderful screenwriter that's working on a drama about Jose's life.
But within his lifetime, he didn't really experience the kind of, what it will be like tomorrow and the film.
Yeah, I mean, seeing your life portrayed in a film is in a way, the gravity of that is not to be matched. And I think Jose really wanted that for himself. He did have plays written about him, and he was a huge star in his day at the Black Cat. He couldn't walk down the street without tremendous affection.
And he lived till 90, or 1, 91. Yeah. It was some discussion about his birth year.
Yeah.
But, so he kept going. Maybe he was hoping, he'd live long enough to see it happen.
Yeah, well, we all were, really. Yeah, we're sad to see him pass.
Without him knowing, or did he know? I mean, does he know? Did he know?
Well, yeah, he worked intimately with the screenwriter for several months now, and I guess they knew each other way back when, too. So this is, this would have been near and dear to him. And, when I sit in that darkened theater, I will be channeling him in a big way, and I hope to God I live to see that movie,
Let's listen to his voice. This was given to me by the KLW News team today, and I don't exactly know where it came from and what the context of it was, but it's late in life, and here's Jose Soria in his words on Out in the Bay on KLW.
My name is Jose Julio Soria. They made friends in the court system. It created a family for people that wouldn't have had one. Tradition is good, because you have to know where you've been to know where you're going. You do good work, your work will fight your battles. I don't want to be remembered for superficial things. I want to be remembered for the good things that I did, what I promoted, how I united the city that I love. Short time. So make the most of it.
That's the voice of Jose Soria, whom we are honoring here on Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Dan Nicoletta. the historian and photographer and photojournalist who was portrayed in the movie Milk. He ran Harvey Milk's camera store in the Castro, worked on Harvey Milk's campaign and knew Jose and worked with him creatively a few years ago, and was part of reporting on him back in the 70s with the Imperial Court. Tomorrow is his memorial at Grace Cathedral. It will be a San Francisco-only kind of affair, I am sure, Dan, don't you think?
Indeed, indeed. Please come down.
There's sometimes living here for almost 30 years where I'll be like, that's only in San Francisco, and I'm sure this will be one of those things.
Yeah.
We'll be only here do we do it this way that we do. It's such a pleasure to have you on. Will you come back sometime? I know you're not keen on talking about yourself too much, but I would love to get to know you a little bit better and especially let other people get to know you and your work. You can find Dan at Danny Nicoletta, DannyNicoletta.com. He's an amazing historic figure himself, shy though he is.
Thank you, Marilyn. It would be my pleasure to come back.
It's a pleasure. Thanks again, Dan. You've been listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guest is Danny Nicoletta, who worked on Harvey Milk's campaign. His photographs were featured in the Academy Award-winning Rob Epstein film The Times of Harvey Milk and the Mark Hustis film Sex Is during the AIDS crisis. You can find him again at DannyNicoletta.com. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, and then we archive it for podcasting and on-demand listening at outinthebay.com or outinthebay.org. Plus, you can get us on your phone. You just go to our website and download the Stitcher app. And then please check out our Playing Favorites page, where we put up a dozen of our best shows over these last eight, almost 9 years. Ang Lee, Sylvester, John Waters, Sybil Shepherd, Leslie Gore. Yeah, she's a lesbian. And many more. So make a donation. Help us out. It's tax deductible. It keeps us on the air. And we need your support. Out in the Bay is supported in part, it's a tiny amount, by the Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral and Information Service, providing legal referrals in over 100 areas of the law, including those most relevant to the LGBT community. Information online at sfbar.org/LRIS. Are you writing that down? LRIS. Or by phone, 989-1616 here at the 415. sfbar.org/LRIS. Write us with your comments or questions, but try not to yelp at us. God. Reach us directly. My email is marilyn@outinthebay.com. Eric Janssen's is eric@outinthebay.com. Thanks to the staff and management of KALW. Joanne Marr is our fantastic engineer. Out in the Bay is produced by Eric Janssen, our executive producer, and me, your talented host. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me. Thank you.